Alright, I would introduce myself in my language to be a Yata, Shay, Greg, Kanagan, the Abishis Chin, Toji, as a Shay, the Tokamai, that's another, a Hutad Nenshla, and Le Shanto, that Nasha. It means, I introduce my clans and then where I'm from on the Navajo Reservation in north here of Flagstaff, about 2.5 hours. Full blooded Navajo. We call ourselves Diné, which means the people in our language. I grew up without no water or electricity till about middle school. And the only place that had water electricity was the school buildings, elementary schools and the middle schools. And in high school, I moved out here to Flagstaff for high school at the Flagstaff Border Town dormitories. So I stayed in dormitories ever since I was younger, because my mom and dad were extreme alcoholics and they couldn't take care of us like they should have, I guess. So I didn't drink from when I was a kid till I was about 17 years old. I picked up my first drink, only because when I saw my parents fighting, doing all that crazy stuff, going to jail, cousins coming in out of prison, I just kind of told myself, like, I'm never going to drink alcohol. You know, I'm never going to fucking do that shit. I'm never going to, you know, touch it. So till my grandma passed away in my junior year of high school, that's when I picked up my first drink of alcohol. And that's where my story started. I don't know what normal drinking is, because my family, when they drink alcohol, they drink alcohol. You know what I mean? Like, mom and dad brings back 30 packs, 40 ounces, all that stuff. So when I started drinking, that's how I started drinking. I finished a whole fifth of peppermint schnapps. And then I was just kind of off and running, you know, from there. I only enjoyed drinking for about 6 months when it started to really affect my life. Took off from home, started off by myself. I got myself in school. I got myself an apartment. I forged my mom and dad's signatures on my papers, you know. Got a job in Flagstaff, and I was going pretty good, and I traveled out of the country for a bit, and came back, and then slowly, surely, all of our stories are similar. I started losing everything. I lost my job first, then I lost my school, then I lost my apartment, then the last thing to lose was my girlfriend. I couldn't do life, you know, so I kind of just said, like, fuck it, I'm just going to go travel all over the United States. I'm a free spirit, you know, like, I don't need society, you know, that kind of stuff. And I started hitchhiking all over the place and just lost, basically, trying to find myself. And ended up back in Flagstaff. Just tried to do it again. I tried to get a job, an apartment, it just didn't happen. You know, I just couldn't do it. And that's when I started going to jail. Ended up in jail, you know, just living on the streets kind of stuff. And doing community service, you know, at first it was just disorderly conduct, you know, just public intoxication kind of stuff. And then it started turning into assaults, and it was just kind of in and out, like, you know, at first it was just one night in jail, and then it was like fucking 1 weekend in jail, then it was one whole week in jail, then it was a whole month in jail, and so the progression of my disease got worse as time went along. I went back home because I couldn't do it in Flagstaff. I got in a huge fight with my parents, and just my dad, because my mom was out of the house by this time. So I got in a huge fight with my dad, and I was, like, super frustrated, and, you know, like, my life was started off as shit. You know, I was like, all these cards I was dealt in life, you know, I'd never had a chance kind of stuff. Just kind of pissed off. I consider myself an atheist around this time. For a while there, I didn't believe in God. I didn't believe in my own culture because I'm like this, you know, I'm this kind of person, blah, blah, blah. So then I was walking back to the highway, and that's when I decided to reach out to this being, you know, like whatever it was. Like at the time I was so desperate. I was so like on my last fucking whatever, you know. I just didn't know what to do anymore because in my mind I had tried everything. I tried it, you know. I tried to start my life again. It just didn't happen. And I did a prayer to God. I was like, whoever the fuck you are, I'm fucking tired of this shit. You know, just get me out of here. You know what I mean? Just like, I want a different life. You know, I just want a chance, you know. And the clouds opened up and a bolt of lightning shot down. No, just kidding. It didn't happen like that. It would have been awesome if God worked like that. It would have been easier. You know what I mean? But it didn't, you know. In fact, it took me all night to hitchhike back to Flagstaff. But that same weekend, I got thrown in jail, and this time for assaulting a police officer in a blackout. And they put me in jail for about a month. My case went through the courts, and they put me on standard probation. Got off really lucky, my first chance. While I was in the jail, I decided to read the Bible. Right, I was going to read the Bible, so I read the whole Bible from Genesis to Revelations. And when I got out, I thought I had the power of God behind me. You know, I'm like, this is it. You know what I mean? I'm going to do this life. You know, I was like super pumped, and getting released from jail after a month, and then. You know, months later after I got out of jail, I relapsed and I did another assault and I stole some 40 ounce from the Conoco station, and I woke up back in jail again out of a blackout. You know, I was like, fuck, I'm here again. Like that, I was pissed off at God, like, fuck you, God, you don't exist now. You know, like, I'm totally convinced, you know, like, you don't exist, and this is just life and blah, blah, blah. But what happened is when I got back in jail, there was a treatment program in jail called the Exodus program that opened up, was closed off to high-risk inmates before, but they decided to try people from APOD, is what they call it, to come into the Exodus program to see if they can help people from the high risk, you know, like the assault charges and all that, you know, like the murderers or whatever. So what their deal was, like, they would look back on your record, and if it all was alcohol related, they would kind of consider you to be in the program. So they threw me in treatment through the jail, and that was my first AA meeting, was in jail. And we did AA for 90 days. Every evening we would set up our chairs and we would sit there and we'd have an AA. And then I got out of jail after about 4 months later and started this deal. You know, I came to AA, my first meeting. I had this preconceived notion of Alcoholics Anonymous at the time being just a bunch of old people who didn't drink anymore, you know, that just kind of met, you know, and whatever the TVs, kind of like the television shows and the movies kind of displayed of AA, that's kind of my idea of it. And I went to my first meeting at the happy hour group, and there just happened to be a bunch of old people who were there who didn't drink anymore. You know, like, I came to AA and I was like, damn, you know, like, it's just a bunch of old people. You know, and it was like, I didn't know that there was a young people's group. So I didn't have anything to do. My life was, I used up all my first chances in life, you know. I got a felony, you know, I fucking, you know, all my jobs, kept quitting them. You know, I got a job and the manager pissed me off and I was like, fuck you, and then I'll find another job, you know what I mean? So like the longest jobs I ever had was like about 3 months at a time. You know, I just could not keep a job. So I came into AA and had nothing, you know, all homeless, alcohol just took everything away from me. So I just kept going to meetings, and but it had been about 3 months before I decided that that this wasn't for me. You know, AA wasn't for me. I just kind of like, you know, I can't, I don't, I'm not feeling it here. You know, this is, you know, it's not me. But when they say that God works for you long before you know it, you know, I can only see that now, because at the time when I was about to decide not to come to AA anymore, this lady in my home group shared an experience that I had connected to, like, really well. You know what I mean? Like, she's the one that saved my life, because her experience got me. You know, for some reason, my ears and my mind and my heart opened up at the last minute, you know, when I was about to just quit AA and just not come back. So I kept coming back, you know, and then I started listening, and you know, I started opening up even more to the people there. Of course, I had all these preconceived ideas of God and philosophy, and I like reading books that kind of have a deeper, you know, thing to life, you know, like Edgar Allan Poe. He understands, you know what I mean? Like, kind of stuff, yeah. And that's my idea of everything was all clouded at the time, and it took a while for me to figure it all out. But I worked the steps. I didn't work them with one sponsor. I worked them like with seven sponsors, because like I came with, if my sponsor said something kind of ridiculous and stupid, I'd fire him and go find another one. You know what I mean? Just because he disagreed with me on something, you know. So my step working was with multiple sponsors. I went through my first deal there. But then I kept coming back. You know, the only thing perfect I ever did in AA is I just kept coming back. That's it. You know, I just kept coming to meetings. Because something happened along the way where my mind started to clear a little bit, and I started to understand God a little bit more. And of course, being in AA as a Native American, there's also that kind of boundary, you know, it's in my head, you know. I had to get over that first before, so my journey in AA was rough, you know, it was crazy, you know. I resented white people in the beginning, you know, I really did, you know, I really didn't like white people. And like I said, you know, my mind started to open up, my heart started to open up more the more I came back, and I started hearing things like, you know, if you're in a meeting and you're frustrated by two people and you're like, damn, those two motherfuckers right there, you know, in your head. And I went out of a meeting, I was complaining to this guy, and he was like, you know what they say, Greg? I'm like, what? He's like, if there's more than two assholes in the room, you just might be the third one, you know? And I was like, and this guy has taught me a lot, you know? He would be like, he'd say like, there's this guy sitting across the room, he's just staring at me, you know, I'm just getting uncomfortable, like, what is this guy staring at me for, you know, like, oh, you know, just like, oh, you know, just, this guy's, you know, then after the meeting, he just goes up to him, I'm going to confront this motherfucker because he's staring at me, you know, he goes up to him, he's like, what the fuck are you staring at me for? And he's like, the guy's like, huh? And then the lady next to him says, the guy's blind, you know? Because, like, that's that thing in my head, you know, these jumping to conclusions about all kinds of things, you know, that's my problem, you know, I'm alcoholic, it's all, the problem centers in my mind, you know? So the steps, man, they clear all that stuff out. All the AA sayings, you know, easy does it, you know, one day at a time. All those things today, those little cliches became more real to me. I started to understand them a little bit more as I went along the road. And then there just came a point where I my pride and my ego was deflated, you know. It was deflated, you know. I come to a point now where I want a good life, you know. I want to have a family. I want to go to school now, you know. I want to do all those things now. And now I believe I really do have a chance to do all that stuff. Besides my criminal background, besides where I've come from, besides all of that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me that. And I think that the most important gift that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me was a belief in God, you know, or a higher power. Where you could develop your own conception of a higher power. But because right now, like when I'm stressed out, I just go like, you know, I can't handle this, you know, I just give it up. Please take this from me and just make me do your will now, you know, kind of stuff. And I do prayer meditation all the time. You know, I'm a good AA guy now. You know what I mean? Like, and I do a lot of service work, picked up a lot of commitments. I started my own Native American meeting, and we're growing as a group now in Flagstaff. And all of my dreams that I've always wanted to do, I'm working on them now and are starting to come true. You know, it's pretty crazy. You know, I fixed my relationship with my mom and dad. That's one thing I never wanted to talk to my mom ever again. But working in Ninth Step, I opened that avenue back up for me. You know, and my brothers, you know, my relationship with them is improving all the time. And I'm no longer like that guy that says, I'm fucked. You know what I mean? I don't have a chance. You know, all this kind of stuff in my head. I'm no longer like that anymore. Now I believe differently, and it's all because of the program. I became desperate enough to do it. I really did. You know, I really became desperate enough to do this because I don't want to die. When I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there's one person every year that has passed away. You know, that I've hung out with, that I went to fellowship with. You know, they're gone now. You know, this 18-year-old kid just this past year overdosed from heroin. This disease, like, we'll come in, we'll get well, you know, forget all of the hurts and all the stuff, but then, like, we'll fuck with it again. You know, that's how powerful it is. You know, we just came out of that kind of stuff, but we'll go back to it because the obsession is so powerful it blocks out any other thought in my mind is I just want to get drunk, you know, and it's subtle, it's powerful, it's cunning, and it's baffling. But that's why I keep coming to AA meetings to give myself a chance, because I'll find an excuse, you know. I'll find a way to get drunk, and I don't want to do that. So with you guys, you know, I have a chance. AA has taught me a lot, and I just kind of hope you guys keep coming back. That's all I really suggest, is just keep coming back. Get pissed off, keep coming back. You relapse, come back. Your girlfriend breaks up with you, your boyfriend breaks up with you, keep coming back. You know, you lose your job, keep coming back, you know. That's just my suggestion. I tell all my sponsees that too. Like, don't find that reason to stay away from AA, because this life is worth living. You know, that'll pass. Thanks.
All right, I'm Alcree, alcoholic. I'm originally from Tucson, Arizona. I spent 18 and a half years there before I moved up to Flagstaff to go to school 5 years ago. I grew up in upper middle class suburban home. Both my parents are white, you know. I have one younger brother. It's just two kids. Everything looks perfect from the outside, you know. All of the friends I had growing up thought, oh yeah, your parents are so cool, you know, you guys have it really well. And it was totally different for me being, you know, under my parents' wing, and they have different expectations of me because I'm biologically related to them. But anybody else, totally okay, you know, you can fuck up and they're gonna forgive you, and if, you know, I have the wrong sexuality or something, I just feel like I judge myself because they've judged me in other ways. Growing up, my mom was like the stoic, frugal one and kind of masculine. I've seen her cry maybe once in my life. So I kind of grew up with this idea like that I have to be this like strong female. I'm not allowed to cry ever. And that still sticks with me today. Like, I get, you know, scared, sad, whatever, and I still have trouble crying and letting things out because of that. My dad, though, was like the emotional one that like would go off and like buy new kitchen stuff and like have it installed. And my mom would come home and be like, well, did we have the money for that? You know, but it was just weird growing up with a mom who's kind of masculine and a dad who's kind of like a little bit more effeminate. And both of them are very, very intelligent people. My mom is an atheist and my dad is agnostic. And I found out when I was 17, after I lost my virginity, that I was supposed to have Christian morals, that I wasn't supposed to have sex until after marriage. And that was kind of like damaging to me, that like, okay, why weren't the expectations set down beforehand? Why didn't, you know, they tell me? Why was there no communication? And so, you know, I still have problems communicating. It's hard for me to let things out and, like, to tell people how I feel. I don't know. I took my first drink when I was, like, 16 or 17. I was on, like, varsity sports, like, all of high school. And one day I got off a workout, was, like, biked home. My blood's still pumping. And there was, like, this half-full bottle of, like, white wine sitting in the kitchen. And I was like, okay, I'm going to pour myself a shot of this. And, like, just, like, a shot worth of wine. I was like, okay, this totally feels great because, you know, it just absorbs so quickly. And so, from the beginning, I didn't think I had a problem because I wasn't consuming large amounts of alcohol and I wasn't consuming it every day. So it was kind of like a binge thing where I would go out, you know, on a weekend or whatever, and I would drink till I throw up, you know, and I remember most of what I've done drunk because I decided that I would drink enough to get really fucked up just so that I would have an excuse to do the things that I was doing. I don't know. It's like my sexuality came out while I was drunk because I didn't want to allow myself to be who I was sober. I didn't feel comfortable being, you know, a strong female and saying, okay, I like to fuck dudes in the butt. Like, that's not normal. I don't think anybody thinks that's normal. But, so I spent several years of my life thinking I was a gay man born with the wrong physique because I like giving and receiving anal sex. So, like, that was totally an identity crisis. And I was like, I have to get drunk over this because I can't do this sober. This is horrible. And, like, it was just funny. So now I have recognized that, like, okay, I'm pansexual. So I don't care if you're male or female. If I care about who you are and we have a connection, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be. But people labeling you as bisexual or whatever, saying, oh, well, you have to pick one, you know, that frustrated me too. So, yeah, I'm just a really weird person, I feel like, but on the outside, I kind of look normal, I guess. Like, I'm not sure how to explain myself most of the time. And I feel like going into college, I was out to, like, try and impress everybody, that I was trying to be, like, the funny kid and, like, going out of my way to, like, be an extrovert when I'm kind of, like, introverted to some extent. So, and it's been cool getting sober and learning how to be an extrovert and how to, like, not force myself, but allow myself to kind of grow out of the boundaries that I've, like, previously put up for who I was, you know? And now I can be different. And I just recently was like in a polyamorous relationship where I had a girlfriend and a boyfriend, and they both knew about each other. Everybody had some form of communication going on, and they've met each other. And my girlfriend had trouble staying sober, and she would tell me about it. And she'd be like, hey, I just fucked up. Like, you know, I don't know what to do with myself. And I got scared because I felt responsible. Like, maybe me being in a relationship with her that wasn't monogamous was, like, damaging her. That, like, it was my fault. So I broke up with her, and my boyfriend moved away to California. And this is all, like, after I've been, like, a year clean. So, like, you know, the road's still a little bit rocky for me. And to this day, we're still friends. Like, she'll call me up, we'll come hang out and, like, talk. And that's really cool to me to be like, hey, I'd rather be the matron of honor at your wedding than be that next fucked up ex-girlfriend that you had, you know? Yeah. I don't really know what to talk about. I'm a really unique person, and I was named after a Viking goddess, also known as the Valkyries. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of them before, but they're also known as the Angels of Death. Mythology is that they ride on Pegasuses, and they take pure souls from the battlefield up to Valhalla, which is heaven. And it's just like, I'm not Norwegian. Like, why was I named after that? Like, I'm German, Swiss, French, Lebanese, Swiss, and, like, Sioux, I think, but, like, not enough to be part of the tribe, you know? So it's like, okay, I'm a mutt, and that's fine. And but everybody's like, oh, you're just Caucasian, you're white, you know? And I'm like, no, there's a lot more that goes into that, you know? I guess we'll talk about my alcoholism. I studied abroad in Germany about 3 years ago now, and every night of the week I would get drunk, like every single night, because I felt like having an American accent was scary. Like trying to speak in German without having any alcohol in my system was literally like, it felt impossible. So I'd take a drink and be like, okay, cool, I'm buzzed, you know, like now I'm not so scared of the fact that I have an accent. And then I just keep going, you know, because why would you stop? Like, that, you know, one's not enough. And usually I would lose count after like 9 shots or like 9 drinks. And I'd take home people I didn't even know. I'd take home multiple people. And like within a 2-month span, I had slept with like 11 new dudes. Like, I don't remember half their names. Like, and that's gross. That's disgust. I don't want to be like some sorority whore, you know, that's like a has-been and like, oh yeah, back in college I was so cool. Like, that's just not who I am. Like, I want to grow up to be, you know, a respectable woman, not just like another girl that got drunk all the time and like was just like smashed, you know. So anyway, studying abroad in Germany helped me to realize like who I was, but I was also like having the best and worst time of my life while I was there. I was like super depressed. Like, sometimes when I'd come home, like I wake up in the morning, I'd be like really hungover, and a friend of mine kept talking me out of killing myself, like multiple times. We'd have conversations over Facebook, and I spiraled out of control like a semester after that. When I came back to the United States, I actually had a couple friends who were running drugs up from Phoenix to Flagstaff, and they're like, hey, I just got this new batch of shit, like, you know, we gotta test it out. And so I decided to try it out, and I was painting this dude's RV the whole night. Like, I fucking hate painting. Like, what? It was weird. So I couldn't go to sleep. And like the next morning, it's like 4 a.m. I'm like, okay, I have to be at work in like an hour. Like, what do I do with myself? So I like go home, and my ex-boyfriend's like at the house. And I'm like, I can't go in there, you know, just me and him. Cause like he tried to rip me out of my car 12 hours prior. And I was like, okay, this is scary, you know? So I had passed a cop on the way over to my apartment. So I'm high as shit still, like coming down from this stuff almost. And I walk up to this cop, and I'm like, hey, I think I need a civil standby at my apartment. I give him my address. And so we meet over there in like 15 minutes. He walks me into my apartment, you know, shines a light on my, you know, ex at the time. And my dog's sitting at the, you know, foot of the couch. And I walk in, grab my clothes. I'm kind of like frazzled. My eyeballs are wigging out. And I go to work, and apparently my boyfriend had called my boss's boss in corporate because he thought I stole his paycheck. And I had turned my phone off the previous night because I was like, whatever, I'm not going to talk to this dude. I'm going to go get drunk and high. And so that sucked because I got fired from my job. I had broken up with my boyfriend. He took my dog. And we lost our apartment. So I remember going to the courthouse after getting fired from work, filing an order of protection against him, and sitting in my car, and I call my friend who had talked me out of suicide in Germany, and I'm like, hey, my life's really fucked up. Like, can you help me out? Like, what do I do? He's like, hey, there's this place you can go, you know, at 10 in the morning. My sister's gonna be there. And that was my first meeting. I sat in the corner wearing a black dress crying. And I was like, I suck at life. And like, I called myself an alcoholic that very first day. I was still coming down off of like shit that wasn't alcohol. And I was like, I have a huge problem. So that was really devastating. But I guess it was definitely a learning experience. Like, I had been friends with that guy for like 2.5 years before he decided like now is the time. And it was cool to just have someone there like that you learn to be friends with as a family member, who's willing to save your life like that. And that's the kind of family you find in the program, you know. Shortly after I got into the program, he got a chip with like three X's on it. And I was like, 30 fucking years? Like, I'm not even that old. Like, how do you stay clean for 30 years? And here I am sitting in there with like 30 days, maybe, you know. So I stumbled a few times, went back out a little bit, and then I decided to clean my shit up. And the first time I ever went to jail was after I had a year clean, which sucked because I thought, like, oh, I'm invincible, you know, like, nobody's going to look at me. I drive like a safe person, like, and I spent 13 hours in jail crying, going, my life sucks. I have to pee in a corner and sit in this other corner. And, like, they put me on suicide watch because I told them I wanted to kill someone. I decided I didn't want to tell them that I wanted to kill the cops. I told them I wanted to kill myself. It was just stupid. So, needless to say, I've had a weird road, you know, different story from most people I've ever heard of, and I haven't talked about God yet. How about that? You know? I missed a subject. Oh, crap. So, that's one of those words I don't like to say. I have a dog. That's God backwards. It's, you know, he's great. Having a recovery animal has really helped me out to, like, feel like, okay, if I can be a good mom to him, like, maybe there is something, like, positive working in the world, and, like, that, you know, I am not the most powerful thing here, and I know that, you know. Mother Nature strikes when I'm out hiking, and I'm like, well, shit, I'm gonna get wet. There's no stopping that. So, I don't know. I keep losing my train of thought, and I hope I'm not babbling too much. So I think maybe that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Hi, my name's Dan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dan.
My sobriety birthday is 10/28/2011. So, quick backstory about me. From Tucson as well, born and raised there. Both my parents, like, my parents were married for 42 years, no divorces. Three of my four siblings are married. There's kids. I was the youngest of five. We were raised in a very conservative Christian household. I remember growing up, I heard my grandmother didn't allow playing cards in the house because they represented the devil. They were the gambling, like, gambling was the tools of the devil. I heard stories like, my mom didn't allow my sister to, my sister's older than I am. Like, Dirty Dancing wasn't allowed in the house because it was a wrong movie. Just little, like, really conservative. Like, I didn't know who the Beatles were until I was, like, in my teens. Rock and roll, that just didn't register. I was raised with you go to school, you go to church, you graduate high school, in college, you meet the woman, you get married, whether you get the college degree or not, it's trivial. But you get married, you have kids, you procreate, and continue the process. And early on, I felt something different. Like, I would flip through, like, the Sears catalog and wonder why there was only, like, one page of male models and, like, eight pages of female models. Like, I just didn't get that. Like, and, like, this is, like, when I was, like, 12 or 13 and, like, sexuality hadn't hit yet, but I just knew from then on something was slightly off in my head. And about the time I was, like, 14, 15, I was like, oh, you like boys, but this isn't okay. In the church and the culture I was raised in, it was, you're going to get AIDS and go to hell. That's what it was. So, about the time I hit 18, 19, I was like, fuck it, I came out, I told my parents I was gay, and I just kind of did this F you to the world. But I didn't have any identity past that. Like, taste in music, taste in movies. I had a lot of fear. Fear of rejection from people in society. Fear of myself. Like, I was told this lifestyle I'm living is going to send me to hell, so I was like, well, I'm going to hell anyway, so fuck it. And the first time I got drunk was in Rocky Point. Me and a buddy drove down, we got drunk, and I'm like, this is amazing! It was wine coolers and Tecate. is what got me drunk the first time. And it was like chugging the Tecate in a quick swig of the wine cooler to get that nasty flavor out of the mouth. And yeah, Tecate, it was kind of nasty. And I noticed we had like two bottles left between me and my buddy. And mind you, this is my first time drinking, never had experience with alcohol, and I knew it wasn't enough. And I went, I don't know what I was doing, like this random hotel on the beach in Mexico. I'm going looking for more liquor, even though I have no idea where to find it. And I came back to the room, realized there wasn't any. We finished what we had, went to sleep, and drove back. And I think it was almost a year before I drank again. Because I didn't, like, the second or third time I got drunk, it was a really sloppy, messy drunk. I earned the nickname Subtitles that night because people said, we needed subtitles to understand what you were saying. Like, I was just babbling incoherently. It was like, that was the first time I blacked out because I just, that night was kind of a blur. And I remember waking up in a bed going, fuck, I never want this, like, I can't ever drink like this in public. I don't want to drink like this again or be this messy in front of people. Like, I didn't want to be messy in front of people. I wanted to drink like that because I fucking loved it. But I didn't want to lose control like that in front of anybody because it would be just keeping up that good face and that good appearance. So that kind of led me, as like I hit 21, that's when I started drinking because I got the job at the gay bar. Because it allowed me to make money, move out on my own, kind of like establish independence. And it was like, well, why go to class and study when I can go to the bar and drink? There's at one point, I remember, like, we were doing rehearsal for this charity show, and we went to the bar, and we started doing shots. And I'm like, why am I going to go back to class? This is too much fun. And it was just really, I hate saying it, was really easy to become an alcoholic in that environment of bar life. And it took time. And it numbed out any fears that I had. It just numbed me, and I loved it. Because I didn't have to be anybody, I could just be the drunk. I could control, like, how much I drank in the bar towards the end. Like, early on, it was kind of like I would go out, have four or five drinks, go home, pass out, no big deal. But towards the end, I'd have to go home and have another one. And then another two, then another three. And then it was, I had my airline shooters with me when I went into the bar because I didn't want to spend the prices in the bar. Like, even though I was getting $2 drinks that were triples and doubles, it still wasn't enough, and I didn't want to. And it was this weird cycle of, like, fear, wanting to numb out, and not wanting to be the person. I didn't know who I was. I never knew who I was, and it caused me at some points to be suicidal. I was like, why am I bothering living life? And it's really hard to threaten somebody, this is going to kill you, when they don't care if they're going to live or die. This, when people, the year before I got sober, I had a doctor look at me. He's like, you keep drinking like this, you're dead in 3 years. And that kept me sober for about 3 weeks. And I was like, I really didn't give a shit if I cared. Like, I was committing suicide with my drinking. And there was a few other other outside issues in there. And it was, I saw through my addictions, I found validation in other people. If you found me attractive, I was validated. That didn't mean I have to find you attractive. You just had to find me attractive. And so for me to find you attractive, I had to drink a little bit more maybe, or I had to be so numb I didn't care. It was that kind of cycle that would go on. And then I remember I'd wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to drink today. And I would get through my whole day, and I'd be driving home, and then I would see the Walgreens I'd always stop at and get my airline shooters. And then instinctively, I would just instantly turn signal, pull into the parking lot, get my four airline shooters. 99 peaches were my thing at the end. I loved those little, like, airline shooters. They were $1 a piece. It was controlled drinking. And I would get four. I'm only going to do four tonight. And before I was halfway home, two of them were gone. And then I would go to the other Walgreens, because I didn't want them to think I was an alcoholic. So I'd go to the other Walgreens across, like, 5 miles away, and I would hit that one and get four more. And then as I was driving back, then I had to, like, do that 5 miles back to my house, and then two more would be gone. So I was down back to my original four of the eight. And I'm like, oh, no, I need more. Then I would stop at the Circle K and get... Like, I just had this system of I would jump liquor stores because I didn't want anybody to think I was an alcoholic. And that's kind of how my addiction went. I didn't want you to know who I was. My last run, it was basically because of the doctor told me my pancreas was literally bleeding into my stomach. So I would drink, I would throw up, and then I'd be like, I have 45 minutes till I throw up again, and I would start chugging as much as I could to catch a buzz before I hacked it back up. There's one time I even think, like, I threw up in a cup, and I think I even drank that because I knew there was liquor in there. Just the insanity of my addiction. My first AA meeting was sometime in March 2009. I had just gotten out of a detox. I went to detox to make my family happy. And, like, it was becoming a clear problem. I had an issue with alcohol. So I was like, I'll go to detox and, like, kind of get the family off the back. I went. And then I got out, and I was talking to one of my coworkers, and she was like, my mom's in AA. Maybe you should go. She'll meet you at the meeting. And I went, and I sat next to her. I don't remember shit from the meeting. I was sweating. I was shaking. Anybody in their first 30 days? Boom, I got the elbow. I had to stand up. Hi, I'm Dan. They're like, does anybody need a big book? Boom, I got the elbow. Anybody's like, I think I stood up like three times in the first 10 minutes of the meeting. And it was like 80 people in this room, and I was mortified. And the only thing I remember that meeting is some guy that sat behind me just looked at me with that pity eyes going, kind of with that, I'm glad I'm not you. He gave me that whole, like, just, I'm really glad, like, it sucks to be you right now, kind of, like, and I was just like, yeah, it does suck to be me. But I just stayed in that revolving door, and after my last drunk, I was living on a couch, my family didn't want anything to do with me. Relationships were minimal. The only relationships I had is if I went to the bar and bought you drinks or you bought me drinks. And I remember at the end of my last run, I remember laying on the couch and said, God, kill me or get me sober. That was like, it's kind of shitty when your two options are either kill me or get me sober. Because I didn't know how to live with alcohol anymore, and I didn't know how to live without it. So I said a prayer that night. I asked my higher power, whoever the fuck's up there, to help me. And that, when I finally admitted defeat on that level, is when it changed. How it changed was I got involved in meetings primarily. If you're from Tucson, the Odds and Ends group was my home group there. I started meeting the sponsor I got. I didn't necessarily want what he had. I wanted the calmness and the serenity he had. He was one of the most calm and understanding people in the program. But he would talk to me about his former anger management issues and how he worked on it. Like, he would talk about how he worked on himself, how he changed himself for the better. And he never told me, like, that's wrong, that's right. He would just, maybe you should think about it. I don't know. Pray about it. What are your intentions? When I was like, hey, date somebody, it was more or less, can I go out and get laid? He was just like, what are your intentions? Like, if you're meeting someone just to get off, that's one thing, but if you're actually going to date someone, make sure you get to know them first. And honestly, for me, being a gay man and dating in the AA programs, not exactly easy. Gay men like to drink. And they drink a lot. It's part of that subculture. And I always joke living in Flagstaff, there's I think like five of us that I claim there's five gays in Flagstaff who are sober. But that's also forced me out of my bubble. Beforehand, I never felt that I could have like good relationships with other men because we didn't have things in common or they would judge me. But since I've moved to Flagstaff and I've gotten to know my home group, which is pretty much the host committee, and they've gotten to know me and I've been able to share with them, they don't give a shit. They really, it's just this great group of guys that just doesn't care, and all they care about is like, are you staying sober? That's the primary focus. That combined, like, especially like my fourth and fifth step of like looking at my problems and being willing to address them has dramatically shifted how I look at myself, and I'm not the guy laying on the couch saying, kill me anymore. There's times where I think life's really shitty and I don't like this, and my default is, maybe I should just kill myself. But that default doesn't stick around as long anymore. And I've learned that when I get to that point, I need to talk to somebody about it and just kind of admit it and move on. And with that, I will end.